And then in chapter 16, the seventh false optimism they were trusting in is the city of Jerusalem. They thought, well, Jerusalem is God's city. It's God's special city. Nothing bad can happen to Jerusalem. And in chapter 16, Ezekiel says, let me tell you something about Jerusalem. Jerusalem was an unwanted baby lying in with her umbilical cord uncut in a pool of blood. And God rescued that baby. And that baby grew into a beautiful woman who became eligible for love and got married. And then she became an adulteress. And her adultery was worse than Samaria, the northern kingdom, and it was even worse than Sodom and Gomorrah. Remember how bad Sodom and Gomorrah was. So how can God avert judgment on the city of Jerusalem given its spiritual condition? And the eighth false optimism they were trusting in was Zedekiah, the last reigning king in Judah. And he had a special treaty worked out with Nebuchadnezzar, where if he behaved himself, Nebuchadnezzar would leave Zedekiah alone. And everybody said, well, that's just going to keep happening. Zedekiah will never come. And so Ezekiel gives a prophecy about how Egypt is going to come and entice Zedekiah to rebel against Nebuchadnezzar, and Nebuchadnezzar's wrath will not be averted. And then the ninth false optimism they were trusting in, according to chapter 18, is a false proverb which went like this: the fathers eat sour grapes, and so their children's teeth are set on edge. And basically what they were saying is, God can't judge us, because if God judged us, He would be judging what our parents did. So they were sort of passing the buck away from themselves to their parents. And it's in Ezekiel 18 that God explains that when He judges people for their own sin. He doesn't judge them for what their parents did or what their grandparents did. It's their own choices that they're making to rebel against God's covenant. And this whole section, which is fairly lengthy, ends with a funeral dirge. It's a song. And it's sort of eerie because it's singing a song at a funeral before the death has happened. So the death is inevitable, is what he's saying. And in this song, he laments three princes, the final kings of Judah, Jehoahaz, Jehoiachin, and Zedekiah. So what he's done there is he's shattered all their false optimisms and confidences. And then you go into chapter 20, and you have a section here entitled Historical Causes and Reality of Coming Judgment. And in chapter 20, he gives a history of the nation. He looks at the nation when it was in Egypt, when it was in the wilderness, all the years it was in Canaan to the present day. And he says, you know what's characterized this nation from beginning to end is idolatry. And the current generation is no different. And then in chapter 20, verses 45 through 49, the end of the chapter, he gives the parable of the forest fire where God will burn the southern area of Israel. And the idea is if God is going to burn the southern area, He's going to burn the whole thing. And then in chapter 21, He gives the four messages of the sword. So notice just for a minute chapter 21. We know that there's four sermons here because it repeats the expression, the word of the Lord came to me. Every time He says the word of the Lord came to me, that's a new sermon. And He does that in verse 1, verse 8, verse 18, and verse 28. And these are four messages that deal with the metaphor of the sword. Message 1, the sword is drawn. Message 2, the sword is sharpened and polished. Message 3, the sword is directed. And then message 4 is sort of a repeat, the sword is polished. And it's describing how the sword, through Nebuchadnezzar coming against the nation in 586 BC, cannot be avoided. And then you go to chapter 22, and he gives three messages against Jerusalem. Now, if you take a look at chapter 22, you'll see why there's three messages here. It repeats the expression, the word of the Lord came to me, verse 1. Verse 17, verse 23. So every time he says that, he's giving basically a new message. So message one, the cause of judgment, covenant violations. Message two, the means of judgment, which is going to be the smelting furnace, which causes impurities to rise to the surface. In other words, through this process, God is going to preserve a remnant. And through this remnant, God's going to one day fulfill His covenantal promises. Message three, the objects of the judgment, which would be the princes, the priests, the officials, the prophets, and the people. Why the people? Because the people loved it this way. It's like what Paul says, you know, about the last days in the church, how people will gravitate towards teachers who will tell them what their itching ears want to hear. So who do you blame? Do you blame the false teacher or do you blame the people? The answer is yes. The people are in a state of deception because they basically wanted to be in a state of deception. And from there, you move into his parable of the two sisters. He's got an older sister here named Oholah and a younger sister here named Oholabah. Oholah represents the northern kingdom that was scattered by the Assyrians in 722 BC. Oholabah, the younger sister, represents the southern kingdom that was about to be swept away in 586. And he says the younger sister, by watching the older sister, should have learned her lesson. The older sister became adulterous, promiscuous, and so God's judgment couldn't be averted. And the Assyrians came in 722. The northern kingdom was scattered. And you would think the younger sister would say, gee, I better get my act together so the same thing doesn't happen to me. And Ezekiel says the younger sister, Oholabah, actually became worse than the older sister. She became even more promiscuous. So he's using that to explain why 586 is something that cannot be avoided. I will say this, chapter 16 and chapter 23, which we just talked about, are very sexually graphic. And God is using sexual immorality as an analogy for how he feels about sin amongst his people. You know, this is why the book of James, written to a Jewish audience, chapter 4, verse 4, says, you what people? You adulterous people. See, this is all imagery going back to the Old Testament. And then also in Ezekiel 24, verses 3 through 14, you have the parable of the boiling pot, how it's the water, the heat is turned up, which causes the impurities to rise to the surface, which is a description, once again, of the moral pollution, you know, of the nation. And then you have something very tragic happening. This, to me, is one of the saddest parts of the book, chapter 24, verses 15 through 24, where God kills Ezekiel's wife. And he tells him not to mourn when your wife dies. And he's saying to Ezekiel, I'm taking away the delight of your eyes. And all of that represents the delight of the eyes that's about to be torn away from Judah, which would be the city and the temple when Nebuchadnezzar comes. And it's going to be an event of such magnitude and severity. I don't know if you've ever been in these kind of circumstances where something really bad happens to somebody. And it's so awful that crying almost seems that it would trivialize their situation. Have you ever been in that kind of circumstance? That's sort of what is being described here. I mean, it's so severe that crying and showing emotion wouldn't even be appropriate. So that's what's meant by he's not to mourn over the demise of his wife. And then in chapter 24, verses 1 and 2, he gets word now that Nebuchadnezzar has started the siege. 586 hasn't happened yet, but it's 588, 2 years before, and so Nebuchadnezzar has started the process of tearing down the city and the sanctuary. And the moment Ezekiel gets word of that is the moment his ministry shifts to part two, where he's no longer prophesying judgment upon Judah, but now he turns his attention to the surrounding nations. And he begins to prophesy judgment on them.